Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering, and this week I'm joined by Fianna Fáil MEP for Ireland's Midlands North West constituency, Barry Cowan, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central, Breed Smith, political correspondent with the Sunday Times, Claire Scott, and director of the MSc in Economic Policy at Trinity College Dublin, Barra Rowntree. You're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in. We better start with this desperate row that blew up out of nowhere, really, this week around the residential zoned land tax. Barry, what's going on with this one? Fianna Fáil, Jack Chamber saying that this tax pretty much gone, like deferred for a year, but then we'll have a new government, so probably unlikely to, happen at all. And Leo Varadkar saying it can be fixed. I think Patrick O'Donovan is of that view as well, that it can be sorted out. So what's going on?
Yeah, well, look, obviously the legislation as proposed initially 2 years ago is not workable, and a mechanism that allows legislation to proceed as soon as possible but doesn't in any way compromise the position of active farmers. And it's essential that a resolution is found to arrive at that conclusion.
How long does it take to find a solution?
If that's done in the context of the budget and the finance bill, fine. If it's done immediately thereafter, fine. But obviously the government and the three leaders will have to find a mechanism to ensure that that is the case as soon as it's practically possible and before the March deadline, which we have in relation to the election.
Why do you think it's blown up into this big dirty row we've seen very publicly this week?
Ah, well, of course, the Dáil is not sitting. It's holiday time. You can't get them all together where they would normally be in Leinster House
on
a daily basis and
to
resolve these issues.
I mean, coming out the Green Party, they're so angry about it. Like, Oisín Smith in here during the week, apoplectic, as I said to Patrick O'Donovan earlier. We had Stephen Matthews saying it's like hiding food in a famine. I mean, you can't get much rougher than that.
Yeah, well, look, the bottom line is that a compromise will have to be agreed and reached by all parties if they want to stay in government. It's as simple as that. And I'm sure they will. I'm also conscious, for example, of the passage of the Planning and Development Amendment Bill, which has gone through the Senate, not yet through the Dáil. There are many changes and amendments within that that will help free up and the logjams that are there in relation to the provision of public and private housing. And it's essential that that's done too. And I'm sure the Greens are as committed to that as I and my party are. And ensure that finds its way through the Dáil in the coming weeks and months.
Sitting beside you, Barra Rowntree was pretty much shaking his head during all of that. Why?
Well, it made me despair, just the whole row this week. And I think it just demonstrated how low a priority we are really placing on solving the housing crisis. Because what we're talking about is a measure, a concrete measure, which will actually bring on land that is, and this is the important bit, both zoned for housing and serviced for housing. So that is connected to roads, connected to like electricity, sewage, water, all the things that it needs to kick off. And we haven't zoned very much of that. This isn't the Celtic Tiger days anymore. We've actually very restrictive zoning practices. Mm-hmm. So there's not that much land which is zoned and serviced for housing. And yet we're talking about a measure which would bring that on stream, which has been proposed and in various ways since 2015 and has been delayed or ineffective since then. It's going to be delayed again. And why are we talking about delaying this? We're talking about delaying this because now there's a concern that there's some farmers, again, who are actively farming zoned and serviced land. And so I just find it incredible that in the middle of a housing crisis, that is more of a priority than getting houses on stream. And just an example of this, right? If you go actually to Minister Jack Chambers' own constituency and go to Clonsilla train line, where there's over 100 connections a day into the city and out to Maynooth, what we see is a site directly beside the train station, which is zoned residential. It's on the map, so presumably it's serviced for everything they need. And it's got sheep on it. And that's the situation we're in, where the limited amount of land that we have zoned and serviced for housing, we're saying that we're not going to bring on stream.
Are you saying that actively farmed land shouldn't be left out of this?
Absolutely. I mean, I find it absolutely baffling.
Kick the farmers off. Make them pay the tax.
If the land is zoned and serviced for housing, mm-hmm. why have we got sheep or cattle on it?
But they're trying to win an election.
Well, that might be the case. But then again, for me, that just shows how low a priority solving the housing crisis actually is. What's more important is a small group of farmers who, again, are getting big gains from their land being rezoned and their land being serviced, but want to continue and haven't availed of the option to get it dezoned. And yet again, that's more important than actually getting houses built. Now, I think that really just does demonstrate how low a priority this is. And not just for the government, I should say, because lots of the opposition parties were on the same thing.
Okay.
We had Sinn Féin coming out and saying, oh, well, they should have done this ages ago and excluded the farmers.
Breed, where do you stand on this, Breed?
Well, I heard Piers Doherty make an argument for an amendment to the legislation in the Finance Act that's coming up that would deal with the problem with the farmers actively farming. And I have to say, I agree with him if that's an option. But this has been on the cards since 2019 and it's been put back and put back and put back. And I think there's an element too of the developers and the those with vested interests in hoarding land to make the value of it go up, being involved in this. And the ones I have heard, interviewed both here on this programme and on other programmes like Drive Time, most passionately defending this move to delay it have been the developers. And the Farmers Association are also passionate about it. But it's very clear that this was in the Finance Act in 2021 and it's been put back again. There's lobbying going on and Fianna Fáil are giving into it. And the Green Party are kicking up mortar. Why didn't they kick up mortar 2 years ago? Why didn't they kick up mortar when it was postponed before? Because it's coming up to an election period and they can afford to risk the collapse of the coalition now because everyone believes
it's going to be an election. So they're all politicking.
You're also conscious of the process of zoning alternative land, and the process that that involves is quite lengthy and protracted, and rightly so, by virtue of the local authority consulting with the wider public and it being compliant, the zoning being compliant with directives and policies and in relation to engineering, in relation to servicing, in relation to densities and so forth. So if it were such that this provision is made within the context of the finance bill, you would also need accompanying legislation that would fast track the zoning of land. And we've seen the difficulties we've had with that in the past 40 years ago in efforts to go
here we have,
to resolve that. We've gone too far the other way.
Zoned and serviced land and a measure to activate it. And Fianna Fáil are leading the charge saying, no, sorry, hang on.
Well,
now,
I mean, local authorities in their best,
we're going to upset.
Local authorities with the best will in the world developed county development plans and went through the process I alluded to and zoned lands accordingly. In the meantime, it became apparent that much of that land or some of that land is actively farmed, as is the right and opportunity of those that own it.
An amendment to legislation could
deal with that. Legislation may well deal with that. And it may well be that the Department of Finance have put forward proposals that haven't been workable to date. And that's ultimately for the three leaders in government to discuss, resolve and inform the public of the situation with a view to a resolution thereafter.
But Claire, why do you think that isn't happening now in private, that the three leaders are coming together and having their conversations as they would have done over the lifetime of this government? Suddenly it's being done in public. Why?
Well, I mean, look, we can smell an election in the air. That's ultimately what this is about. And I think that Fianna Fáil privately have been conscious about maybe Fine Gael taking claim of certain aspects of what we're going to see from this budget. The Greens have been doing the same. And I think Fianna Fáil now want to stake claim to show an active support for farmers. Whatever we're going to see in this budget, whatever we're going to see in this finance bill, Fianna Fáil want to come out and say, look, we're backing farmers. They're thinking about their election manifesto.
Yeah, is that wise, though, given that housing is top of the list of concerns for voters?
That's the question. And it's the same, I would say, with Fine Gael kind of looking at inheritance tax and wanting to stake claim to that to drop it, increase the cut-off rate to 400,000 from 350,000. But there's other aspects that we're going to see emerge in terms of rows going forward, I think. I believe that Fine Gael are kind of really looking at ensuring that they take ownership over the lump sum payments that we're going to see before Christmas around the working family payment. And I also think that Fianna Fáil really want to stake claim to the drop in USC. They want to continue on from what Michael McGrath built on last year, which was that drop. We're probably going to see a drop down to 3.5%. But because it's an election budget, mm-hmm. we're going to see a break in the coalition slightly on these issues. They want to show that they're stepping out and laying claim to certain aspects.
So where do you think this is going to go? Can compromise be found on it?
I would imagine so. I think they wanted the slight bit of the row this week. I think it benefits all parties. You've had the Greens being able to come out and say that they are for the development of home ownership in this country. Fianna Fáil are able to appeal to their base and Fine Gael have been able to appeal to their base. So it's benefited everyone within the coalition. It's also
apart
decent.
From those without houses.
Apart from those without houses. And it's also decent fodder for the opposition come September. When it's back, they're able to step forward and say, well, you're not for home ownership in this country, judging by the tone you're taking with the residential land zone tax. So it's all about this election. Mm-hmm. That's what this row is about.
Is there a problem here for farmers? Because they can apply to have their land barra de-zoned, can't they? And not be in this 3% catchment.
Yes, they can. But I think exactly as...
it's a difficult process.
Exactly as we've had outlined, you know, if we are going to defer this by putting in place an exemption for active agriculture, what that's going to mean is we're going to have less land for housing. And it's going to take time because we have to go through all the processes, which are incredibly restrictive and have gotten more restrictive. And I think, you know, I agree very much with what Barry said about, so, you know, with the title. I couldn't I'll just mix up that. But you know, we have made it much too difficult to build housing. And what is being proposed would mean delay housing at a time of crisis. And I just think that has to be the priority, delivering houses.
And the legislation that I mentioned earlier will go a long way to clear many of those logjams in relation to the roads of judicial review, in relation to the length of time that Bord Pleanála adjudicate on applications and so forth. More pressing.
It's easy for an academic sitting beside you, not looking for votes, to say to active farmers, you have to leave your land now because we want to build a housing estate on it?
Obviously, because you won't be dealing with them tomorrow after having said it. But no, like I said earlier, there are property rights, there are entitlements, and people are entitled to make a living on the land that they may have purchased or may have inherited, and are making a huge contribution to this economy, and that has to be respected and appreciated. There's provision within legislation,
the other side of
as
that,
has
though,
been said, for it to be de-zoned, but it's a lengthy process.
It's very valuable land once it's been zoned and the services are put in place, isn't it?
It is, and it becomes more valuable if it complies with the regulations and the directives and the density guidelines and whatnot, and is turned into a viable planning permission, but is restricted if it is taken to the courts via judicial review, is restricted if Bord Pleanála take 12 months or 24 months to make a decision on it, and we have legislation in the offing that addresses that.
The longer it sits there, the more valuable it becomes as well, and that's an element of this, that the developers and those who have the land are saying to themselves, well, if it sits there a bit longer, it'll be more valuable.
And that's why the concept and the commitment that has been made by government has to be realised. But this is an issue, and this is an anomaly that has to be addressed and will be addressed. And as I said earlier, if it's in, you know, it's in the gift of the government and the three party leaders to find a resolution to put forward and resolve this matter and deal with other pressing issues in relation to creating or taking away the logjams that are in place in relation to provision of housing, despite the promises we made. Much more has to be
made. The Green Party will have to back down.
Well, look, you know, we can get into the drama about who's backing down and who's not. I mean, I could point to transport projects around the country that were approved by the last government that had been dropped by Minister Ryan when he was in the department, and that wasn't the agreement that I felt we had reached when we entered into government with them. But I didn't throw the toys out of pram. We'd find resolutions and move forward, because there are bigger issues and more demanding issues that have to be resolved.
From the Green Party's point of view, they won't have to back down because we're hurtling towards an election anyway. So if they vote against the government on this one, it's not going to pull down the coalition that they've done everything bent over backwards to hold on to over the last 4 or 5 years.
I mean, I don't understand how deferral is actually going to solve any of these issues. It's going to delay housing coming on stream. But if you look at the housing that has been zoned and serviced over the course of the last development plans in the council, you know, Dublin councils and the councils around it, less than about 20% was converted from zoned land into housing. And what the assumption is underlying this current development plans is it's going to be 50%. And how is that going to happen without measures like this? And we're not talking about land in the middle of the countryside. What we're talking about, where there is land that is actively farmed, is it's on the outskirts of towns, or in some cases in North County Dublin, it's in the middle of towns. You know, there is land that's... And again, that is... It should not be farmland. Not be farmed. It should be housing during a housing crisis.
Barra, there are people that watch that process take place when local authorities zoned lands and didn't participate in that process and by association approved it. And the day you apply for 10 houses, they can object to it and hold it up for 3 or 5 years. Yeah. Oh. Surely that's what we need to be addressing.
Both.
That's what
it
needs to be addressed
both.
In the context of planning and development amendment.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I 100% agree. The planning system is a huge logjam and constraining and exacerbating the housing crisis. We need to make it easier to build houses, cheaper to build houses. But again, this is one of those measures. And if we're not going to be able to go through this, and again, why aren't we going through this? It's because there's a very small group of farmers. You know, most farmers aren't affected. There's a very small group of people who have land on the outskirts of towns, or again, in some towns in North Dublin, that are affected. And they're the priority rather than something which would actively do something to solve the housing crisis.
OK, well, listen, let's move on now. Breed, I want to talk to you about the Minister for Education's desire to have a national phone ban, mobile phone ban in secondary schools. Now, when we covered this on the programme, I got a lot of messages from people going, is this really the priority when it comes to education? Do you feel the same way about it, or is there merit in the suggestion?
Yeah, totally. I spoke to a lot of friends yesterday who are teachers, and they're all raging about it because they see it as a deflection from the real problems about the schools opening shortly, and some of them already opened. And as we speak, there are parents outside the Department of Education whose kids don't have a school to go to. And there are so many of them, hundreds of them, particularly around Dublin, who can't get a school place because of their special needs. So they're out there this morning protesting about getting a school place. For most schools, there is a policy of not allowing mobile phones into the classroom. They'll allow the kids, bring them to the school, and they leave them in the office or whatever till the end of the school day. There are exceptions where facilities and, you know, sort of infrastructure is so bad that the teachers will say, well, we'll get our phones and we'll do this exercise on it because they don't have the tablets or access to computers, which is another indication of Norma Foley being really cute on this, deflecting from all of the problems there are around education, the school transport, the lack of spaces for special needs kids, the lack of SNAs, the shortage of teachers themselves. And she hones in on this and it's not really an issue at all
well,
in
she,
most schools.
She would probably argue that she can do more than one thing at once, you know.
But she isn't doing more than one thing at once. It's the only thing that's hit the headlines and it's not an issue for most teachers in most schools. It's not an issue because they have their own policies that they implement on keeping the phones out of the classroom.
Well, Barry, there's another minister now for you to defend. Was she right to bring it up? I mean, she clearly feels it's an issue. She says it's a huge distraction.
Exactly. She is Minister for Education. She has a wide range of responsibilities, including many of the issues that you've mentioned, Breed, and much progress has been made. And the more than in housing, you know, there more remains to be done and more will be committed. In this instance, as you rightly say, many boards of management throughout the country have policies in place that restrict their use. But obviously the information and the expertise and the statistics behind the proposal that's before the minister is one which has the best interests of students at heart, and the whole issue of cyberbullying and the impact that that is having on the mental health and well-being of
students. That's a societal issue, though.
It's something that has to be addressed.
And
the Department of Education has a role to play in the societal issue of dealing with this matter. And I respect and appreciate the recommendations that will emanate from the department to regularise this throughout the country and address some of the gaps that exist in some schools.
But I'm sure,
not many, but in some.
I'm sure you know well, though, if you say to a teenager that something is banned, you know the answer you'll get.
Look, I appreciate that. I understand that. But we have to weigh that against the whole issue of cyberbullying that is taking place and the impact it's having. And if that only causes one horrible incident, it has to be addressed by society.
That's going to happen anyway. You know, regardless of whether the phone is in school or not.
Well, Norma Foley, to be fair to her as Minister for Education, has been handed information that would seem to indicate that she feels it necessary to do this. And I respect and appreciate that and acknowledge her bona fides and her commitments. And we will await the detail behind the proposal and see how it can impact positively on the well-being of
and
students.
And we'll await for Norma Foley to hone in on the fact that there are hundreds of children that don't even have a school place to go to.
Exactly.
That there
and she's responsible
that can't
to
get
the,
on the
she's
bus,
accountable
that can't
to the
get on the bus
you know,
to go
Breed,
to school. And I didn't interrupt you the way you interrupted me. But my point here is that this is a deflection from the much more fundamental structural problems inside the education system, and it is not a real issue for most classrooms.
Look, it may not be the most pivotal issue, obviously, within the Department of Education, as I alluded to. But the minister has responsibility right across the department, and this is one of them. And she will respond accordingly to the issues that you raise and the points you make and the instances that you can raise in the Dáil as a public representative in relation to the constituency that you represent, as is the case in any democracy.
Claire, the Minister for Education is likely to be supported on this by the Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil party leader Micheál Martin, because he has spoken about this in the past as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, this goes back to April, and I remember this was one of the strongest issues that the Taoiseach went in on during his Ardèche speech, which was that this was the new public health emergency. And this was not necessarily about phones, but just about social media in general and the use of social media. And at that point, you know, he kind of compared it to, you know, the public health crisis of smoking inside that led to the smoking ban. So I think within the party, this is seen as the next big public health crisis that it wants to deal with. So it's trying to make its mark on this again.
Yeah, in the meantime, though, and Breed, you referred to it there. Another thing we were talking about was people who can't get a place on the bus to go to school, and parents, both of them working, a child who has to travel 20 kilometres and been told this year, no, you're not getting your bus air and ticket. Now, we have this every year, but really, Barry, it's one that the government has not been able to sort out.
Yeah, it is a perennial issue.
I'm sure you've seen it yourself.
I have in myself, my own constituents, of course I do. And I continue to have it and have had representations this week that I'm working with councillors and local TDs to help address. You know, bus air and provide the service for the department. It's 380 odd million per year, as it was in 2023. You know, there are issues by way of different regions interpreting the different rules and regulations associated with the delivery of the service that can cause issues. I've had success on occasions in addressing some of those, and not in some other cases. But the whole issue is about spare seats on a bus and the discrepancy allowances that are available.
Get a bigger bus.
it really does boil down to that. And you have another issue where a bus company was telling me this week that they can't get drivers for the bus and they couldn't honour the contract that they had. And that's another issue, you know, that has to be addressed. And, you know, many over 70s, for example, can't carry out these contracts, whereas in other countries they can. And that's something that I would hope that the government might address immediately to help address this issue.
Barra?
I think that's one thing that we see across a whole range of areas, actually, is that, you know, the issue isn't necessarily spending money. It's not that the government is either unwilling or unable to spend the money. It's that there aren't the people around to do it. Mm-hmm. But also then part of it, as I've kind of said, is linked to sometimes the rules that we also impose around that. So why is it that people, you know, we're working later, we're going to be working later, a lot later, I'm going to be working a lot later, certainly. But why is that people age 71, 72 can't drive a bus and can't drive a school bus? And that reduces the pool of people who could possibly do this job. You know, I think those are the type of things we need to look at, not just on this issue, but also, you know, in childcare. We have, it's part of the debate that's been going around this week about some providers withdrawing because the rules are very onerous in some way, or there's, you know, lots of paperwork to be done. And I think we do have to increase, and again, we've talked about it in planning, but so this is an issue, I think, across a whole range of policy, of really pressing policy issues that, you know, with one hand, the state is trying to spend lots of money and achieve good outcomes. On the other hand, it's making it more difficult for itself to do so.
Well, the department
we've tackled the issue of school books, which parents have responded very positively to because of the costs associated with them heretofore. And that's welcome. And progress has been made through the secondary system in that regard, too. And maybe now we could tackle this whole area of bus routes and of bus provision, because as has been said, there's huge money being thrown at it. There's different interpretations in different regions by different arms of bus air, which conflicts with the Department of Education.
That nearest school rule seems to be a huge issue. And that can be done away with the stroke of a pen.
When you drill down into individual cases, it's human error often which resolves the matter, whereby the measurement was incorrect or there wasn't, you know, an appreciation of the exact air code rather than the town's land and this type of thing. You know?
I listened to the interview you had yesterday with two mothers.
The parents,
on how they're dealing with it. And they must be absolutely, utterly frustrated because what they call the temporary alleviation measures have been in place since 2019. That's nearly 5 years. And they still haven't managed to sort it out. And one of the things I think is fundamental to this is the pay and conditions of drivers. You don't retain them unless you pay them properly and they have proper jobs. And the first time I got elected at all, there was a massive national strike in Bus Éireann over their pay and conditions. It was resolved, but things are continually deteriorating because the state is running down the funding to the National Bus Company and privatising a lot of the services. And when you privatise the services, conditions go down further. So it's very hard to retain drivers. I take the point that many drivers over 70, particularly part-time ones, want to still work. And it's an insurance issue, I think, that prevents them. And insurance companies shouldn't be allowed to do that. But the overall workforce has to be treated properly. And the sort of competition that is brought into a market like that is wrong. Mm-hmm. That is a service that should be provided regardless and not tendered out.
That review that was done, which is complete and is going to come in next year and into 2026, I understand that's going to get rid of the nearest school rule. But you could do that straight away.
Exactly.
And it would fix the problem for the parents, certainly, that we spoke to yesterday, who would then be entitled to a ticket on that bus. They wouldn't be looking for the concessionary ticket. Isn't that what you call it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have an obligation too for those with special needs. Obviously don't have a facility within every school, and every area unfortunately doesn't have that facility immediately available to it. You have to go beyond those distances to travel, and concessionary tickets can sometimes be allowed and included in those provisions as well.
Because you have, I mean, the point was made yesterday that, Barry, you know, going back to climate action, you'll have people now driving in individual cars to school and the bus flying past their door, sometimes with available seats on it. Makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. No, and again, in rural areas, and I'm from myself, but it is very difficult to do lots of trips by public transport. But actually, schools are one of those where it is possible to end through that public service via the bus you can. But again, there is just a problem that we're going to need to address, whereby we don't think about the costs often of regulation enough in terms of the restrictions that imposes on our ability to deliver services, be that in the planning system, be that in how we regulate the insurance sector. And again, these things come back to actually prevent us delivering the public services that there's uniform agreement that we should.
Mm-hmm. One other issue I want to address, Claire, one of the first things that Simon Harris did when he became Taoiseach was deal with the tents on the canal which were used by asylum seekers, and very quickly they were removed and barriers were put up, as we saw. Now there are more tents we've seen this week being erected, and people staying there, finding a way to stay there because they don't have anywhere else to go.
Well, I think, I mean, at that stage, it was seen as the right solution, just moving people out of Mount Street and ensuring there weren't tents along the canal and up that street. But I mean, ultimately, it was dealing with the symptom and not the cause. And I mean, at the end of March, I recall Roger O'Gorman came out with a very significant plan, a very clear plan about how this was going to be dealt with. There was near and long term planning included in that in terms of housing and accommodation, where there were going to build capacity. And part of that near kind of interim strategy was going to be the use of kind of office blocks that were empty and, you know, kind of using turnkey accommodation as well. But we haven't seen any movement on that since.
So it's no surprise then, Bree, that the tents are back.
No, absolutely not. I mean, these are human beings. They're going to do their best to be able to put their head down in a bit of safety. And I know that many of them went outside of the city to parks and suburbs and were attacked. They were physically attacked and aggressively attacked by fascists and far-right activists in areas that are saying that they're a danger, they're a threat to women, they're a threat to children. This nonsense has to be challenged by the state. And in a way, what Simon Harris did by removing the tents in the way that they did and not understanding these will come back because human beings will find a way around your systems, was a racist move by the state that has encouraged the sort of antagonism.
We'll be careful now of accusing any individual or organisation of racism.
And what we saw recently was an elected councillor from a far-right party going along the canal and throwing tents into the canal.
Well, look, as Claire said, commitments were made to provide accommodation. Certainly, in light of the Catherine Day report, you know, we had a commitment made for reception centres to be built. She then came back and said that we needed even more than she said in her first report. The state promised that we would have a list of where those reception centres would be placed, and we'd have moves on that, I think, before the local and European elections. We haven't seen anything on that front yet, Barry. This is just something that this government is not going to deal with, is it, before the next election?
I wouldn't say that. And some progress has been made, obviously not enough. And it's incumbent on Roderick O'Gorman as Minister of Responsibility in this area to enlighten us as to what progress has been made since he made those commitments. And that's something that we look forward to him doing. In the meantime, as Breed has said, there's a responsibility on the state to find accommodation. And there's an understanding amongst the public to assist and help in that rather than restrict and block, as is the case in many instances.
My time is up, but thank you all for coming in. Breed Smith, Barry Cowan, Barra Rowantree and Claire Scott. That's all from us for this week. Thank you very much for listening. The programme was produced today by John Byrne. Our researcher is Amy Ryan. Our broadcast coordinator, Jarlath Holland. And James Feeney was on sound. Let's head over now to Michael Cahill.